Good day, everyone. Welcome back to Dreams Warp, the podcast designed to awaken you to a new reality. For today's episode, you know what day it is. It's Sunday, and that means it's time for our Zen stream. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Hey all, before we get into this, I just need to allow a quick word from a sponsor. Thanks for your patience. All right, let's go ahead and get into this. My name is George, and if this is your first time here, first, I want to say thank you for checking out the podcast. The purpose of this podcast is to explore the mind and the depths of consciousness that create it. Ultimately, the podcast is here to help you gain a sense of mastery over your reality and your life through mastery of the mind. So if that's something that interests you, you have definitely come to the right place. And I'd like to say that if you find the content of this podcast helpful, I hope that you will consider sharing it with others. That is a wonderful way to support the podcast. Now, we do have a few series here. We have our Tuesday Taoism. We have our Zen stream on Sunday. And I do try to throw an extra episode in here and there on a topic related, something having to do with mental health. That is my professional background. I've been a psychotherapist now for about 16 years. So you'll hear about concepts like mindfulness, meditation, healthy living, exercise, relationships, mental illness, basically anything and everything that helps you reach your goals, achieve your dreams, just live an overall happier day-to-day life. Now, today being Sunday, we are doing our Zen stream. And I found I have been pulling from different sources for our Zen stream on Sundays for the last, who knows how long, it's been a little while. But one of the sources that I do tend to go back to quite a bit is this amazing book by a pretty well-known Vietnamese Zen monk named Thich Nhat Hanh. He wrote a book called Your True Home, and it is a collection of, I believe it's 365 short daily meditations. And some of them are just, I mean, they're all good, but some of them are just really, really, really amazing. And I found one here that I'm going to read to you today and discuss a little bit that I think brings up a very nice, kind of simple and straightforward, succinct way of describing the limitations that we often place on ourselves and how you can, it kind of gives us, I guess you could say, a framework for looking at those limitations and hopefully through looking at them and becoming more aware of them, we can then work to dissolve them, get them out of the way. And this particular little chapter is called Untying the Knots. So I'm going to read it. Again, it's pretty short. And then we'll discuss it a little bit. And hopefully we'll both get something out of this for today, for our practice. So it says here, in Buddhist psychology, the word samyojana in Sanskrit refers to internal formations, fetters, or knots. When someone says something unkind to us, for example, if we do not understand why he said it and we become irritated, a knot will be tied in us. The lack of understanding is the basis for every internal knot. If we practice mindfulness, we can learn the skill of recognizing a knot the moment it is tied in us and find a way to untie it. Internal formations need our full attention as soon as they form, while they are still loosely tied, so that the work of untying them will be easy. That's the end of the short meditation. So I think it becomes clear as I read that when I say not, I'm not talking about N-O-T, negation. I'm talking about like when you tie a knot, not your shoes. He's talking here about internal knots. And I really, like I just said a few moments ago, I really like this idea, this mental kind of picture of a knot, like the way you tie your shoelaces, for describing these internal formations that he's talking about. And one of the things that I find just amazingly fascinating about a Zen type of approach to living or Taoist type of approach to living is that there is this, at least, and again, let me be clear, This has been my personal interpretation through my experience with practices like Zen, teachings like Taoism. I am by no means the authority or the final word. I always say if you want to learn more, you really have to find it for yourself. That is one of the real important principles, I believe, in Zen Buddhism, is not taking anybody's word for it, but having direct experience. And that very concept ties into this thing that I was just about to share that I've learned through the years of my practice, is that we, as human beings, we have these amazing minds, right? And we just, we're so proud of our own intelligence and our own minds. And what starts to happen through our experience of living, and really just through the way that our brains operate, is that we have, we always have a filtering or interpreting mechanism that is interpreting the direct experience of reality, right? So we have, for example, let's say you see two people, having a heated discussion, and they're a little bit far away. You can't hear every word they're saying, right? So you see this image, and depending on a million different factors, you can interpret what's going on in many different ways. Oh, they're arguing. Oh, they're talking about, a show, and they're really passionate about it. Or they're laughing. Oh, they're bonding. Or I mean, you could interpret it a thousand different ways, yet it's the absolutely the same reality. So one way that I have personally visualized this to myself is I almost see it's a little humorous. I'll admit, okay, it's a little humorous, but I kind of see. Have you ever seen the movie Inside Out? It's an animated movie about our feelings and emotions happening within us, kind of like our internal monologue and how we interpret situations that happen. And it's I don't want to digress here, but if you get a chance, especially if you have children, it's a great movie to watch, Inside Out. But there's this image basically of reality appearing inside your mind as if on a TV screen, right? And in front of the TV screen, it almost looks like a like a spaceship inside picture Star Trek, right? You have this big screen, and then you have all these dials and knobs and levers and these different things that you could then push, pull, turn, to react to what you're seeing. But what happens in Inside Out, at least toward the end of the movie, and no, spoiler alert, but it's no not really a big deal, is that the internal instruments get updated, right? They get upgraded, and then there's a whole new plethora of ways of interpreting, reacting, and I think in a lot of ways, similar to what I spoke about in yesterday's episode. If you haven't heard it, I encourage you to check it out because it did talk about some pretty important topics. But one of the things that I mentioned is that these instruments or these mechanisms through which we interpret our reality, you can kind of call them or label them like filters, right? These are filtering processes that take a current moment experience and put it through almost like a set of rules for how we've interpreted our past, how we understand our reality, how we interpret what happened. So, things like cultural upbringing, the socioeconomic status that we grew up in, the relationship we had with loved ones, the lessons we learned, quote unquote, growing up. Even historical kind of things that have been handed down, which you could also argue is cultural, even religious beliefs, all of these things kind of build this lens through which we perceive our moment-to-moment reality. And in the Zen practice and in the Taoism, in the Taoist philosophy, at least again, my personal experience, my personal opinion is that it's about eliminating as much as possible that any unnecessary filtering and being able to really deal with the direct experience of our reality without doing too much thinking, interpreting, because really all of our knots going back to this little chapter I read are found there. They're found in the filters. They're found in those lessons. They're found in those instruments through which we are interpreting our moment-to-moment reality. So when he talks about here untying the knots, It's not about, I'm not going to go as far as to say that we have to totally get rid of all filtering mechanisms, because that would be a very difficult life to live, especially as a human being, right? We do need some sort of, I always use, when I used to teach a class on this, and the class was, again, I don't want to digress too much here, but the class was kind of like about, there's a field of in psychotherapy we call cognitive theory, cognitive behavioral therapy, and it's about looking at our own thoughts, right? So we all have a tendency to react to certain situations similar to the way we reacted to them in the past. I mean, that's not rocket science. I mean, it's kind of common sense, right? So we kind of tend to have repetitious thoughts, repetitious beliefs that we kind of we use those to guide how we handle our lives, how we interact with others. And a lot of these thoughts are not always in, you know, the best for us, right? And this is really the basis when we talk about, for example, like manifesting and things like that. It's these very types of thoughts that we can call or label limiting beliefs, subconscious beliefs that keep us stuck in what feels like a reality that we can't change, we can't get out of, right? And this is 100% what can lock people into anxiety, into depression, is these types of thoughts that interpret the current moment in a way that triggers, you know, negative emotional response, negative behavioral response. So this class was about looking at those automatic thoughts. And I used to always say, you know, we can't get rid of all our thoughts. Just like I was saying a moment ago, we can't get rid of the instruments in our minds. We can't get rid of the filters, right? But what we can do is that we could take some time, like I mentioned in yesterday's podcast episode, to shine our light of attention on those filters themselves. And I think that that is exactly what he's talking about in this particular chapter about untying the knots. So the example I used to use in that class, for reasons why we can't just get rid of all the filters, is I used to say, you know, imagine that you are, you know, you're applying for a brand new job in a new city, you know, you just move there, and you know, you get directions to this job. And so you're going for your first interview, let's say, right? And then you have the address, you have the directions, but when you're on your way there, what are you doing, right? You've never driven there before. It's a new city, you don't really know the area. So what you're doing is you're placing a tremendous amount of attention to the drive, right? You're paying attention to how fast you're going, you're paying attention to what time it is, you're paying attention to the streetlights, to the, you know, the signs marking the names of the streets, maybe certain landmarks. You're really, really, really focused on the drive. But, right, once you've driven there 100 times, you got the job, you've driven there 100 times, and I'm sure you've had this experience because I know I have, you could almost do it on autopilot, right? You hardly have to pay attention at all. I mean, hell, we listen to the radio, talk on the phone, you know, drink coffee, daydream, you know, all kinds of things I wouldn't recommend, but we do those things when we've driven to the same place over and over and over again. And this, what this does is that it frees our attention to focus on something else, right? And that's an amazing gift we have, the ability for our minds to be able to do that. Our brains, I should say. Our brains have the ability to put things that we have learned into sort of like a loop that we can just activate at any point in time, so that we don't have to pay all that much attention to the process once we've done it over and over and over again. And while this is has a lot of pros, right, it also can have some cons, right? Because you could then be using these loops, which may be limiting. I for example, again, just to go on with this metaphor, it's kind of funny. I don't know if you've had this experience driving with someone who takes a longer way to get somewhere, and you tell them, "Look, you know that if you make a left here, you shave 10 minutes off your time." No, I go this way. This is the way I've always gone. This is what I'm used to." Right? And you get people that get stuck in their own beliefs and their own loops, even though they may not be, in your opinion, you know, the most efficient way to do something. And this process, although it's easier to see in things like driving, maybe cooking, you know, maybe the way they do a certain activity, this same process exists in our thinking. in our, the way we feel in our behaviors. It's just a much more subtle thing to be able to see, to be able to clearly look at it. And like he says in this little chapter, untie those knots. Now, how do these knots appear? What types of knots generally I tend to see most often that we really need to look at, and how to untie them? I'm going to get to that in just a sec. Let me just pause here, take a breath, allow a word from a sponsor, and I'll be right back. All right, thank you for your patience. I am back. Let me just take a quick moment here, remind you that if you ever want to reach out to me to ask a question, make a suggestion, express a concern, or if you have an idea for a podcast episode, feel free to email me at elucidatethereal@gmail.com. You can also hop on over to the YouTube channel, same name, Dreams Warp. Find any one of my videos, doesn't matter which one, post a comment under it. I get notified right away, and I could hop on over to YouTube and respond to you there. You can also find me on Twitter, Dreams Warp, all one word. Send me a direct message there, and if you like, and follow me while you're at it. I do post things there regularly that I think serve as nice reminders throughout the day to focus on your breath, focus on your practice, focus on the present moment. So follow me there to get that good stuff. And finally, if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts and you are enjoying the content, I hope you could take a moment, leave a nice rating and review. That's another wonderful way to support the podcast. Okay, so we're talking about these knots, the metaphor that he's using here in this little chapter. For, I think, really what we're talking about. What do these knots do? They basically inhibit our ability to experience the greatest joy in our moment-to-moment reality. That bottom line, that's what they do. And what does the greatest joy look like? Well, it looks like being able to be present and enjoy the magic of being alive, right? And through that, I should add, through that, being able to stay connected to that, you are going to be much, much more likely produce environmental conditions in your life that also make you happy. So good relationships, good financial abundance, good job, feeling like you're doing something productive, feeling basically joyful, right? That's the bottom line. So when we have a lot of these knots, so to speak, it is interrupting or breaking the flow of that energy to be able to get to us, to basically have that kind of joy naturally arise in us that makes each moment, a good one, right? So we want to untie these knots. And I will also say here, which I think is important, again, kind of jumping back to yesterday's episode, is that these knots are what create a karmic type of conditions. And I had mentioned yesterday, karma is basically just another word for cause and effect. So we have certain causes that we make through our thinking, through the way that we relate to our feelings, our behaviors. We create certain causes, and of course these will have certain effects in the future. And this is not, again, not rocket science. It's basically just, if you believe in cause and effect, that's pretty much what karma is. And one thing I had also mentioned yesterday that I feel is important is that we have many, many, many different types of karma, of cause and effect, right? So we have things as basic as genetic type of karma. So there's a certain type of karma that you inherit from, just biologic processes, right? So your parents, your grandparents, and these things. I think actually, in kind of an interesting way, genetics is like a very tangible physical, great metaphor for karma. So again, I could go a little further in that, but I don't want to digress. I want to stick to these knots. But the point is that these knots often keep us trapped and keep that energy that we want to experience blocked. And we obviously want to untie these knots. So there's lots of different kinds of knots, and we're obviously I can't create a whole list of them. There's just too many to mention. But I will say that there are types of knots that affect our relationships more. There are others that affect the self. I'll give you a great example. Let me just come out with it and give you a real concrete example. So I have a relative, an aunt, who her husband just had a pretty bad stroke. And it was a hemorrhagic type of stroke, which is a bleed, a bleed in the brain. And I really did not know this man very well. They live in another state, and she was remarried, so I don't really have a lot of contact with her. I would not say we're estranged, not in any way, shape, or form, but we just don't talk that often. It happens. So I don't really know him very well. But as of course, when this happened, I immediately reached out, started asking questions, trying to find out more of what's going on. And just very interesting things that have that I have noticed out of this situation. So this gentleman had hypertension, but for whatever reason, he was against taking medication for it. And then on top of that, I further learned that he was a smoker, a cigarette smoker. And there was also some drinking involved. I don't know how heavy. I'm not saying the man was an alcoholic or anything like that. But the point is that you can see, like I had mentioned in yesterday's podcast episode, how perhaps the years of smoking, of not taking medication, I highly doubt there was a strong exercise regimen. Perhaps the drinking, we don't really know. But all these things, right, are kind of causes, right, conditions, knots that this person is living with. And eventually, the outcome, the effect is this, hemorrhagic stroke that he had, which is horrible, horrible. And my guess is, and again, all this is now guessing, I think we could just use this example to kind of, explain certain things, is that until something like an effect that's so profound as this happens, and I hope that he's able to recover. He's still in the hospital at this point, and they're still testing and gathering information, and we don't really know how he's going to do basically. But we could y glean from this that s things like hypertension, which could be a genetic type of karma. We don't know. We look at the smoking, which is more of behavioral, right? Which is complicated. It involves thoughts. It involves feelings. It involves behaviors. We have that factor. We have the drinking. We have all of these different things that come together. And you could look at these things as knots, right? And it's these knots that block some positive energy flow from reaching this person, and boom, we have this terrible effect that appears. It's interesting how in Nichiren Buddhism, they have this very interesting concept that cause and effect are not actually separate from one another in ultimate reality. Why? Because time is ultimately a fabrication, right? It's a byproduct of the way that our brain organizes experience. Ultimately, everything is happening in the present moment. And again, we could digress and go off on a tangent there, but I'm not doing that right now. But the idea is that we often create or allow, let me say that's a better way to put it. We often allow certain negative causes or knots to continue in us because we mistakenly believe that the effect could be months, years, decades off from now. And this is such a profoundly deluded point of view. I use myself as an example even. In my family, specifically my father, who passed away when I was a teenager, he had a lot of health problems, high blood pressure. He was very overweight, lots of substance abuse issues. And he, because of all those factors coming together, he had a very, early death. It was late 30s. He had a heart failure and died. And it was quite obviously a traumatic thing for me. And my point being is that as I got older as a teenager, I struggled with issues. I didn't take care of myself. I was rebellious. I was, and there's lots of other things that I'm not going to get into at this moment from my childhood that if I didn't have the practice to like he says in this very chapter, practice mindfulness, quote, I'm quoting here, if we practice mindfulness and learn the skill of recognizing a knot, then, end quote, then what can happen is that these causes, right, these instruments through which we are viewing our moment-to-moment reality never get updated. They never get changed. And of course, through living like this for days, weeks, months, years, decades, what happens is that we start to experience these very negative effects. And in this case, for the case of my aunt's husband, this terrible stroke, you know, and it's very easy for us, because I've been there, I'm speaking for myself here, and I'm not speaking for anybody else, but in my experience working with hundreds, if not thousands of people, is that many human beings tend to live in denial of our own, of the causes that we are making. We don't look at them, we don't want to look at them because it's uncomfortable. But if I hadn't have, I would probably be dead by now. I am now older than my father was when he died. And early 30s, maybe mid 30s, something like that, I started having mild hypertension. And I was put on a very, very low dose of a hypertensive, antihypertensive medication. I'm happy to say that through changing some dietary things and activities, physical activity, I'm now fully off all the medication. I check my blood pressure 2-3 times a week and it's always normal. But that took some major, I'm not going to lie, it took some major work because I for years tried to bring down those numbers. And I struggled and I struggled and I struggled and I struggled and I had to stay on the medication for quite a few years, probably 5 to 10 years. And finally, when I discovered two things, I discovered intermittent fasting and I discovered high intensity interval training. And when I started those two, everything got corrected. In a sense, you can say that at least up until this moment, the knot was untied. That's really it, is that the knot was untied. And the other issues that I struggled with, younger, having issues with substances, that was something also that I needed to untie. And so we all come into this world with certain conditions. And you could spend a whole lifetime trying to figure out, like I said yesterday, why those conditions happened, or perhaps, you know, what was the course through which that those conditions reached you, try to study all that, try to figure it out. And to me, I did that for a while. And what I eventually discovered was that I was looking for something to blame. It's like, oh, well, this way because this happened and that happened. And ultimately, that doesn't really help me change those filters within myself. It doesn't help me change those instruments through which I am living my reality. Ultimately, it's not about why, it's about how do I change it? That's really all that matters. How do I change it? And for me, it started through the practice, just like he's saying in this chapter, the practice of looking deeply, looking, mindfully looking at my own internal thoughts, my own internal relationship to my feelings, my own internal relationship to my behaviors. As I was able to start looking deeply at those things and seeing the way that I react to myself, to things that I see, to things that I hear, to things that I smell, to things that I taste, to things that I touch. I have these automatic knee-jerk kind of reactions, these ways of behaving that are looped, just like the car drive I was describing earlier. And I needed to build enough concentration and perception to really look, turn that light of awareness directly to the self. And look deeply. And then at that moment, things will become clear. And that is really the practice, is seeing clearly and then being able to change the way that I perceive and react to my moment-to-moment reality. Ultimately, the real change comes from changing the instruments within ourselves, not changing the reality that is apparently or appears to be external to us. So I like this little chapter. I think a knot is a good way to, good little metaphor for what we're talking about. I hope that you found the content helpful today. And again, if you want to reach out to me, use any of the methods I described earlier. Have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your day. I'll be back on Tuesday with another installment of Tuesday Taoism. Thanks for listening.